Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
We are in the great outdoors today.
We are in an outdoor studio.
At a picnic table, under the trees, yes. Under the nice sunny sky. You can hear the birds.
Yeah.
You can see people.
I can feel the bugs biting.
Is that a giant tick on your leg?
Well, I'm going to think about those later. I'll be checking for those later.
We came out here today because we have a guest, Ian Parrish. How you doing, buddy?
Good, thank you. It's nice to meet you guys.
You as well. You are currently paddling towards the end.
You're on your final leg.
On the final leg
of the Great Lakes Tour.
Yes.
The North Coast, or the Canadian coast.
Canadian coast, yeah.
Of all four. Great
Four
Lakes.
Great Lakes.
Yes. I keep thinking, oh yeah, Michigan's in Michigan for a reason, right?
It's completely in the United States. Yeah. And it's not that I don't think it's beautiful or I want to go there, but I wanted to do the Canadian coast. That was just what I was compelled to do. So Canada was where it was at, and I knew it would be a lot of fun to see Canada.
And you're on Lake Ontario now.
Yes.
We're at Darlington Provincial Park, which is your area, Derek.
It is. It's 5 minutes from my house.
I actually had to drive to your place this time.
Me and my wife and my kids, we walk here 12 months of the year. Walk these beaches.
Really?
In the winter, they have snow fencing to help prevent erosion. And
kids only bring you here because they know those. They could push you in the lake at any time.
But yeah, it's a nice park. It's a nice location.
Yeah.
You picked a good spot to stay the night.
Thank you. It's a nice, clean park. I don't mind it at all.
It's nice.
Right?
Yeah.
Some of them are iffy. Well,
occasionally.
You're doing your trip. Sometimes you're just on a little sand spit or something.
Yeah, you found me in an interesting spot the other night.
Oh,
didn't you?
Found you the other night there. Hey, look, there's the Scarborough Bluff, so I ain't getting down there. But you'd moved further on a bit, so.
Yeah.
But even still, it was a bit sketchy getting down there.
Absolutely. Staying in Scarborough is just sketchy.
I wasn't going to say that, but I'm not going to not say that.
But I think all the way along, I think any of the major populated areas all kind of have the same social issues right now. So it's a bit sketchy along the shoreline in certain spots, and you just have to adapt and
You find a good safe spot and
absolutely,
and spend the night, and you're out the next day most of the time anyway.
Don't bother anybody; they don't bother you most of the time,
right?
Stay out of the way. Make yourself small.
That's the way to do it.
Yep.
Yep. So let's chat about all of this. First of all,
sure.
Ian, you're from Amherstburg,
yes,
which is on the Detroit River.
In Lake Erie. It's tough to say.
It's right on the corner.
It's right there.
The corner, right at the mouth of
the best of both
the river.
Worlds. River, right? River flow and big water. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. And you learned to kayak when you were like
knee-high
to a grasshopper.
I think I got my first boat for it was like a little Trinity Bay Critter.
Okay.
And I don't know if they even exist anymore, but it was like a little 10-foot boat, and I did everything in that boat for about, I don't know, I probably paddled that thing for 10 years.
You got to learn somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And when you get a beater boat after 10 years.
I was fishing in it and hunting in it by the end. Like, I was using that thing for everything. you couldn't get rid of it because it just wasn't going to die.
Right? Yeah. It's like armored piercing.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. They don't make them like that anymore, I don't think.
Yeah. And that's, so you just continued to kayak after that and you...
I always loved the outdoors. Yeah. And I did my first kind of big kayak trip about 18, I think I was about 18 or 19 years old, and I wanted to see Algonquin Park.
Right.
And so I went with a friend, and that really got me hooked on kayaking in a nicer boat, too.
Right.
Something not necessarily recreational, but something a little bit more advanced. And once you realize you can travel by kayak like that, it's game changer because you can travel so much distance in a day. It's incredible.
Until you come to the portages.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's
exactly.
What's good about doing the Great Lakes.
That's
there's
the
no
Great
portages.
Lakes, yeah.
Well, there's that. I think that's what taught me
the water
lesson. Actually,
<Yeah. laughs>
we avoid the Niagara River.
There's that big waterfall down there. That's quite the portage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, once you get into that. I mean, yeah, there's no stopping you.
Yeah,
you can go anywhere. Like Derek says, once you hit the Great Lakes,
yep,
you can go anywhere.
Absolutely, and I love the Great Lakes. I grew up on the Great Lakes. I spent a lot of time in Long Point growing up. you know, pretty much my entire life. We just sold our place in Long Point about 3 years ago. So my entire childhood and adult life was spent in Long Point and in that environment. And if you know anything about Long Point, it provides a diverse environment for learning how to do all kinds of, or all types of outdoor activities. So it was a great place to grow up because it provided me with the repertoire I was going to need to come out here and do this later in life. So mm-hmm. it's worked out perfect.
Well, yeah, and I mean, one day you're getting nice glass, and then the next day you got 4 or 5 foot swells.
Exactly.
You know, so
exactly.
You know, and you know what? It's a good training ground.
Yep.
You know, because sometimes it's going to happen. You're going to get all of a sudden something's coming over the hill, and all the wind picks up.
Yep.
And you've got a couple of kilometers to go or something, and you got to fight it.
Your skills always make a difference at the end of the day.
Yes.
Always, always. You know, it is important to build your skills. It is important to, you know, if you've never done it before, it's definitely important to get somebody out with you and at least give you some basic instruction and get you going in the right direction.
Right.
And help you start thinking about how to look at the environment around you. What to look for in the sky, what to pay attention to in the water, how to read the water. Everything out there kind of matters. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be critical about it, but you have to know what it means.
Yes. And it's a lot easier these days to find people that will teach you.
People want to share.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the type of guy that, you know, if you're in a wreck boat and I'm in a really nice boat and I pull up on you and you're having the best day of your life, I'm going to have the best day of my life.
Yeah.
I don't care that you're in a wreck boat, man. Yeah. I couldn't care less. We're going to have fun and, you know what I mean? Yeah. And just hanging out like that, you're going to learn a lot.
Definitely.
And so we need to do a lot more of that.
Yeah, you know what? It's the whole point of getting people out, right? I mean, that's what we've talked about for ages. And we're not the only ones. It's becoming more of a trend of people saying, let's get people out there.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely.
Because they, at one point, got out there.
Yep.
And are realizing how much fun it is, especially with the mental health stuff, too, right?
Absolutely.
Get out there. Get into nature. And
I think that's a really important thing to touch on is kayaking and extreme sports are exceptionally therapeutic for people. Mm-hmm. And so when you see people making entry into extreme sports and they're looking at taking on what I'll refer to as natural threats opposed to man-made threats, there's a certain level of accommodation you have to make for those types of people because they're not going to be impressed by overbearing behaviors and so
right.
forth. It's just that's not why they're there. They're
oh,
there
exactly,
to have
yeah.
a good time yeah. for it to be therapeutic. And oftentimes right now we're kind of losing a bit of that touch.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, I mean, and getting out there solo, I mean, everybody's, you know, there are the naysayers about going out solo.
Of course. That's a pretty hot topic, to be honest.
It'll always be. Yep. You know what? That'll be a topic. PFDs or no PFDs. Should I bring an extra paddle? Like, there's all these little things that are just, everybody's got their opinion on it.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, you know what? Here's what's suggested.
Exactly.
You do you.
Yeah.
And good luck to you.
Exactly.
Be safe out there. We always, safety third. But, you know, like, be safe out there.
Natural selection exists even for us. We're out there participating in nature.
Yeah.
Natural selection definitely plays a role.
We've talked before about risk assessments.
Yes.
You know, we've done shows on it. Say, like, at what point do you call it a day?
Yeah, if you're on an extended journey, if you're on a multi-day trip and maybe you come into some inclement weather, something that you may not be able to handle or you become sick. And it's like at what point do you say, if I keep pushing through with this, I'm going to be risking my life. So mm-hmm. maybe I should cut it off now instead of being too stubborn to push through.
Yeah.
So you have to make your own decision. And that's where your own experience and skills will come into play. So you can say, you know what, I'm starting to hit the limit of my skills because of the weather, because of I'm dehydrated, I'm sick, I'm whatever. And there's some point where you have to come and make a decision to...
If you're in the water and the conditions are changing, or you're not sure about something, the acronym SAPP, S-A-P-P.
Okay.
It's something that a member of the Canadian Coast Guard taught me. Just stop, assess the situation, plan, what you're going to do and then proceed.
Mm-hmm.
So just stop what you're doing.
Yes.
Yep. Don't proceed. If you don't have the answer, like it, if it is not common sense answer to you,
yeah,
you should just stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. That's what they say, right?
Stop.
Step back for a second. Take a breather.
Yeah.
Assess what's going on.
Yeah. So SAP, I'd love to see more people starting to adopt that idea, because I know that's the idea that gets me through a lot of potentially challenging situations on these lakes is you just stop. You know, even if you're in your boat, you can still stop far enough away from something that you can identify what's happening. You can see the features of the water. You can see if there's standing waves coming out of high flow areas. And then you can proceed after you understand what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a lot of the risk out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right then and there. It's
so getting back to the mental health part is like going on the solo trips. Like, it's great to go on these trips with people.
To share stuff
or whatever.
Yeah,
but sometimes, just by yourself for days on end, just clears your mind. There's not that little voice in your ear going, hey, let's do that.
Yeah.
You know, constantly. Yeah. And you're just like, it's just you, your own thoughts. You work stuff out. You know, maybe you got stuff going on at home. You can work that out over a couple of days in your own brain. And look at things differently. And at the end of the day, you go home going, yeah, I was an idiot. Or, no, you're still the idiot.
Yeah, absolutely. Kayaking has been therapy for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a really rough go with some medical issues, and it's definitely caused some mental health related issues along with it through that period of time in my life. And if I didn't have kayaking during that period of time in my life, I'm not sure that it wasn't easy to get through it. So I don't want to phrase it that way, but I wouldn't have been able to get through it because I wouldn't have had anything to look outside for.
Right.
You know, everything, when you're feeling like that, you're internalizing a lot of things. There's a lot of pain in your life. You're physically unwell, you know, all these sorts of things. So without having something to work towards during that period of time in my life, you know, every year is a lot of work to get to the start of an expedition.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I didn't have that during that period of time, I'm not sure what I would have done. Well, so it's paddling quite literally is the last 3-4 years has saved my life.
And I mean, that's with the canoe trippers, especially it's like come February when, what is the Blue Monday or whatever they call that, you get the cabin fever.
Oh, yeah.
February, the one day in February, whatever they say.
Cabin fever.
Yeah, the Blue Monday or something like that. All of a sudden, people are getting their maps out, and they're starting to plan their summer trips.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
Because just that little bit of like, oh, I'm going to go here and
I need something
like
to look forward to keep me going.
Yeah, it just picks you up and gets you in that mood and drags you back up.
Absolutely.
Right? Which Absolutely. Is, yeah, and you're getting out on the water. And
before I started paddling the Great Lakes, it was like a 5-year idea that I had to do it. It sat with me for about 5 years, and I'd kind of consistently, on a regular basis, looked at maps and studied the routes and looked at things and looked at the coastline, and I realized through that 5-year period, this is totally possible. This is absolutely 100% totally possible. There's a whole lot. I love small town Canada because there's a lot of folklore.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The Great Lakes. Yeah. I found out about a 90-kilometer section of pure cliffs where there's no sections to get out of and all these sorts of things. They don't exist.
Superior?
Yeah. Like, you know, like an impenetrable fortress of rock, you know. And so you hear all these things and you really, at first it kind of almost bothers you, and then you just sort of tune it out and you realize that that's the folklore and that's the local lore that guys have and that's what they're you know passing on.
Yeah,
and I love it. I think it's great because then I go out there and you know that 90 kilometer section is really only about 11 kilometers. And you find out really quick
this big.
Exactly. You find out really quick that a lot of the things that people fear about doing what I do don't exist.
Right.
Like once you go out and do a little bit of what I do, You start to understand that a lot of the myths are just myths. A lot of the talk around the communities are just talk around the communities. It doesn't actually exist out there.
Right.
Once you realize it doesn't actually exist out there, you start to feel a little more comfortable, a little more safe, and then you can actually focus on what really matters, which is the paddling.
Yeah. So, but some of the folklore is it's pretty neat to listen to.
It's fun. Right? I love sitting with an old fisherman up north somewhere and
just
listen to what he's got to say.
Yeah, listen to him gab and talk all the tales.
I love it. I love it a lot. Yeah, I hope to be one of those chiseled face, old sun beaten men someday that has all the stories about the Great Lakes. So
at 130 years of age,
right? That's my goal. You know, that's me. That's what I want. That's my goal in life. So.
So your goal was to solo kayak the Canadian coast of the four Great Lakes.
Yes.
2020, you did Lake Erie.
That was my first one. Yep.
Then 2021, you did Superior.
Yes.
Then you had an off year because you were ill.
Yep.
2023, Georgian Bay.
And, yeah, we did. So Lake Superior and Georgian Bay, or Lake Superior and the top of Lake Huron kind of meet up. Because when I did Lake Superior, I ended up in Thessalon, Ontario, which is on Lake Huron, the very top of Lake Huron.
Yeah.
And then I paddled from there into Georgian Bay through Little Current, I believe it's called. And that was the year that I fell sick during an expedition. So I did about 700 kilometers that year, which is a pretty good expedition.
Right.
Fell ill, and that was it for that season. And then I picked it up in Meaford the next year, which was 2024.
So last year. Lake Huron.
Yep.
And then this year, you're finishing everything off on Lake Ontario.
Yes.
Paul was just pulled a squirrel because there's a golf buggy thing with rangers coming around.
They're emptying garbage cans.
Yeah. All of a sudden, three heads. So, and Lake Michigan, like I say, lies entirely within the United States, so that one's not getting...
I hear it's an absolutely beautiful lake.
Oh, we had a blast on
it. And there's certainly parts of the American coast of Superior that I would love to see someday. There's still so much lake out there if I really want to continue on with this. I mean, why not see them all?
Right.
But it takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of time, energy. It takes you away from your family and your friends. And then there's some, believe it or not, with solo paddling, there's a bit of social pressure that kind of comes with being a soloist too, and you need to be able to shoulder a lot of that. So it's been an interesting run paddling the lakes.
At the end of the day, though, you got to think about one person.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah. And it's my happiness.
You're doing it. It's your happy place. It's your goal to do. And if you're letting everybody else tell you can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you know what? In my opinion, you might as well just hang it all up and call it a day.
I think I said something along the lines of that today online to somebody. They said, don't solo paddle. That was kind of the gist of what I read. And I kind of responded, maybe a little bit too critically, but maybe not. And I just kind of said, I'm really glad I don't listen.
Right?
Yeah. Because I would have never done, with kind of some of the rhetoric that's out there, I would have never done this if I listened. If I had listened to the people around me, I would have never accomplished what I've accomplished in paddle sports.
Yeah. I think all of us have had that conversation with people at the beginning, like, why are you going out there by yourself? Don't be going out there by yourself.
Yeah.
And had we not gone out there by yourself, the amount of things we would have missed out on done.
But with those people who say that to me don't realize, at 10 years old, I was already doing 7 kilometers open water in a 10-foot wreck boat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people that have never gone 7 kilometers open water
ever. Exactly.
Even with a level two. They stay close to shore, they stay in the islands, they stay, that's why Georgian Bay is so good for people, because it's really protected waters. Lots of little island chains and so forth. So it's great, but you're unsheltered out here.
Yes.
And that's why I like this.
Yeah.
Is if something goes wrong, there's nowhere to go. You have to deal with it.
You know what? And that's when you're your skills come into play.
Absolutely.
The skills you... You're not going out here day one and doing Lake Ontario.
No.
Let's just say that.
No. So it's, it's a lifetime culmination.
And I think that's part of the thing is, is people look at these and go, you're solo... You should not be doing that. I've been doing this for 30 years.
And that's...
Why should I not be doing this?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I've been in situations where you're looking like all of a sudden, ooh, we are not getting off this lake today.
Exactly.
And you pull to the shore.
Yep.
You're
exactly.
We're hunkering down. There's a thunderstorm coming. We're not beating a thunderstorm.
No.
Everything in I did a solo trip up in Algonquin. And everything was supposed to be a beautiful fall weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going up there, and the first day I get up there, and all of a sudden this ice storm comes in. And the people that I turned around next day came right back out, and even the people at the permits office were going, this was not in the forecast. But you got years of doing these trips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get the skills to learn
yep.
when to say stop. What you can do, what your limits are.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be telling me don't solo paddle yeah. or don't do that because you don't know what I know.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Maybe you shouldn't because you're limited on your skills, but the rest of us.
For a lot of people. A lot of people don't always just, a lot of people post on social media and a lot of people don't. So if somebody all of a sudden who's got a lifetime of experience decides one day, maybe I'll just start posting on this page or that page. You don't know who that person is. You don't know what exactly. they're from or what they're doing. And you're all over them about things that don't make any sense to that person because they've more experience doing for than... Yeah.
And the flip side is we are in the land of trolls.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Keyboard warriors.
Right. Always. Yeah, the keyboard warriors. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know what? They'll just pick something out there just to get a reaction.
Oh, for a reaction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just
absolutely.
Like at some points. And I know there's people that have their YouTube pages and stuff. And you read some of the comments. And
nowadays, that block button.
Oh,
I love that button. Yeah.
They need a middle finger button. But no, you know what? Like I know there was when we were talking about somebody mentioned permits, and some guy was likening getting a permit for camping at a campground, so that the rangers know you're there,
mm-hmm.
to Jewish people having to show papers.
Oh,
to the Nazis. How do you compare? And he was purely looking.
Yeah.
He was trying to get a reaction.
He was just going for a reaction.
And it's like, you know what?
Yeah.
That's like, unrelated. That's when you could just totally wish you could just totally erase
but
all
some
their
people are just
media.
Very reactionary. And some people are just, they're just out. They have so much hatred in their soul that they're just going to want to spread it.
No, you're right about that. There's a lot of anger and stuff in the world right now, it seems like. I'm sure I'm susceptible to it just as anybody else. But
it's
definitely out there.
Mm-hmm. There's, you know what? Like, I got somebody T-boned my truck the other day, and it was bounced right off my truck.
Oh, no.
So it looks like somebody hit with a shopping cart.
Okay.
Whatever. I mean, it's a 13-year-old truck. It's got whatever. It's got more scratches from me than anything else. And at the end of the day, like, you know there's people that just would have
lost it.
Yeah.
And just went up one side, down the other side. And I get out of the car, and I just look at the guy, wiped off the... And his bumper was, a big chunk of his bumper was hanging off.
Oh, no.
And I wiped off all of
his
face.
He got it worse.
Well, he did. And I just thinking to myself, I don't need this negativity and this aggravation. And I'm good. Okay,
get,
I got a little dent.
What you project.
You know? Like. And I just looked at him and said, I'm good. Are you okay? You're good? He said, yep. And didn't do insurance thing or anything like that, which people are like, but there's people pulling around going, I saw everything. You want my number? You want my number?
Yeah, just.
No, I'm good. You know what, dude? You're good. You're okay. We'll go our separate ways if you're good with that. And we did.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I'm just so, because I could have turned that into something totally different.
Absolutely.
You know, and everybody that you see out there, like, that's the first thing that comes to your mind is, oh, what are they going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to, you know, like, what is it, the Karens and the Kevins?
Yeah.
Like, it's to the point where that's what you're expecting with everything.
You know what? You might be right about that. I've certainly felt that way too. Where you kind of walk into places and you're just kind of waiting for waiting for it a little bit. You know,
and it gets to the point where
rubs off on you,
where you're looking online and there's, you know, like a paddling group and they're having a discussion, and you second guess about joining that discussion, even though you've got 30 years experience,
yeah,
because you know somebody's going to just, well, thank you for joining the discussion. I've got something to say to that.
Had that exact experience today. Had that exact experience today on a big page. And you know what? People are entitled to their opinion. But, you know, it was one of those conversations where, you know, this will take you out. That's going to take you out. You just shouldn't pat solo. And I said, it's for me, that extreme level of personal accountability in nature is what appeals to me.
Yep. Accidents are going to happen.
Yes.
That's why they're called accidents.
Wind blows.
Yeah.
Water mm-hmm. flows.
Yeah.
And if you decide to put yourself in harm's way, you better have the skills to get yourself out of harm's way,
mm-hmm.
or you shouldn't do it in the first place. And if it bothers you that other people do, leave them alone. Don't be a part of it.
Yep.
Stay away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Go to a group where you feel comfortable at your level doing it. But if you see somebody above your level or doing something above what you think is okay or acceptable, just walk away. It's not a challenging thing. The paddling community should be a lot like the surfing community. And that was kind of what I always expected to find when I decided to get deeper into paddle sports.
Right.
I expected to find a bunch of people who had the same kind of attitudes as surfers did.
Okay.
I didn't find that. I found the total kind of opposite of that. I found it was really uptight and alienating, and you know, if you didn't fit in, it was kind of a tough go. And so it wasn't appealing to me, considering I have an extreme sports background. And so people who are drawn to extreme sports often use extreme sports. I'll touch back on therapy.
Yep.
Are using it as a form of therapy.
Yeah.
And so when you have particularly the younger guys, like in paddle sports right now, I seem to be one of the younger guys. And I'm 44 years old. There's not a lot of younger...
We've been going through so much to tell Derek he's not old. You're ruining it now.
And so the younger guys are really... The younger guys that come from snowboarding and skateboarding and all these other sports that we really kind of want to come into the... You know, into paddle sports. And have some athleticism in mm-hmm. their life when bailing on a skateboard is no longer fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, crashing on a kayak gets a little better because at least there's a lot of water under you. But those personalities and the people coming from those sports and coming into these sports, they're not going to appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's going to turn them off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be too stuffy and too sticky and too regimented. And that was exactly what I kind of found with some of the institutional stuff with paddle sports. It's like, it's great, there's a purpose for it, but there's some things that went too far.
Yeah.
And so we need to kind of really look at it now and say, are we doing more of a disservice? Are we preventing people from making entry into the sport? Because I personally, from what I've seen, believe that's what we're doing now.
Well, I do know all my canoe paddling is all self-taught.
Same with all
of them. I've gone out with people and learned a few things. I've just gone out and tried things. It's all self-taught. And then probably 12 to 15 years ago, all of a sudden everything seemed to be, you have to get this certificate, this certificate, this certificate, this certificate, to the point where some people were saying, well, I don't have the money to get all these, so I'm not going to buy a kayak.
Mm.
Well, wait a minute. You don't have to get those.
No.
It's almost like they're saying you want to drive a car, you've got to get your driver's mm-hmm. license. If you want to go paddling, you've got to have all these. It's nice if you want to get that, if that's your cup of tea.
Thousands of dollars. Mm. So you're making entry into this very expensive sport.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to have a good time. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
People don't want to spend the kind of money we're spending on kayaks to then not have a good time.
Yeah. If getting the certificates and everything is your cup of tea, you do you.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, getting into paddle sports, that's what it's all about. You do you.
Exactly.
If you want to go out there and do kayaking,
individual.
If you want to get out there and do canoeing, stand up paddleboarding. Now,
absolutely.
as hardcore canoe trippers, we were always against, you know, the kayakers.
Yeah, of course, like the BMXers and the skaters at the skate park.
Yeah, you know. And the day I went up, we got a buddy Marcus, and the day I said, yeah, I got a kayak, You did not. Yeah, I did. Why? He was not impressed. That
I have hit canoes,
your head today? Now I got a kayak as well, right?
I was actually thinking about getting a canoe recently. I think, you know, when you have a little family, a canoe trips with a family are fantastic because you can just throw, you can do a little more with a canoe in certain places. It might not be a bad call for me.
Right? Mm-hmm. See? Yeah. Come to the dark side.
All the canoeists I've met have been so laid back and so chill and just so relaxed about everything they do. And you can tell they're really into it. You can tell they're really good at what they do. I've met some phenomenal canoeists in my years now. You know, when I look at the canoe scene, I meet guys like you guys who are laid back and, you know, just want to hang out and have a discussion. You know, I look at guys like Mike Ranta. Mm-hmm. What a cool guy.
He's just a
down-to-earth, chill guy. I want to run into more Mike Rantas.
Right?
That's what I want to see.
We need more Mikes.
Yeah. So I've never met Mike, but I follow his social media. I listen to the things he has to say and how he has to say it. He's the kind of guy that I would totally enjoy being around.
He's a great guy. We haven't seen him in a couple of years now because he wasn't at the show this year.
No, he wasn't. He's I haven't seen him much online much either.
No, I haven't seen a lot coming from him. Every so often I see a video come because he does a lot of videos.
And
so I really liked it. Probably to do that a little bit more of that myself.
Well, I don't know. Out there and drag
I paddled 41K today, man. Come on.
Yeah.
I want to have dinner and go to bed. Yeah. You know.
So, getting back to
we're doing an interview, aren't we?
And sort of on the mental health part.
Sure.
How do you pass the paddling miles? Like long trips can be grueling mentally.
I don't put big numbers on my GPS system. So when I get in my boat in the morning, I'll put like a 5K destination for me. So if I have 40K today or 40K to do,
right?
I don't want to look at 40 to 39, 38 to 37. Yeah. That's going to make you feel horrible.
Yeah.
It really does. But if you put 5K there and then you reach that 5K goal, well, now you feel the beat. Hey, man, I just cleared 5K. This is good.
Mm-hmm.
You put that next 5K little stretch on your GPS, you bring that up, and you start paddling that next 5K stretch. And you do that 6-8 times in a day, you've had 6 or 8 little successors.
Right.
Or successes throughout your day, and you're feeling great by the time you paddle 40K.
Yeah.
I've had 5 or 6 consecutive sections that went at this speed or at this timing, and everything's going well, and it's all coming together. But if I put the whole route on my GPS for 40K and I'm watching it go 39, 38, 37.
That's gonna be a long
day. Not work for me. It just doesn't work. So I definitely play mental games while I'm out there to get through the kilometers.
You have the excitement when the first, you know, tomorrow I'm launching.
Yeah.
I'm launching today.
Exactly.
So between that excitement, because eventually that's wearing off.
I feel that way every morning.
Right.
Yeah. that's what it comes down to, right? I really feel like that excitement you feel at the beginning of an expedition, I feel that excitement regularly throughout the entire expedition. So the majority of mornings I wake up feeling that way when I'm out here.
Nice.
There's definitely mornings where you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I need more sleep. You know, like I'm sore, I'm hurting, I need more food, I need more protein, whatever the case is. But the majority of the time that I'm out here, I don't feel that way. And I'm with nature, I feel grounded, I feel comforted. Nature for me, being just in nature alone, it's my comfort blanket. You hear about kids that have comfort blankets.
Yep.
My comfort blanket was going outside and climbing trees and doing these sorts of things. So for me, being out here is just like I feel embraced by nature.
Right.
I don't feel separate from it. I feel like I'm a part of it. I feel like I'm in it, and I feel like I serve a purpose to it. And so my connection with nature is probably what gives me a bit of the upper hand with what I'm doing in the Great Lakes right now. It's that relationship with nature that makes it all possible.
And when you're paddling these coastlines that you've never seen before, it's something new.
Yeah. But the science is all the same.
Yeah.
People don't realize the science is the same, right? Water doesn't change. Yeah. Hydrodynamics don't change. And so if you are worried about, oh, there might be big waves here, big waves there. Well, all you have to do is study the topography of the lake, and you should be able to figure out where the waves are going to form, how mm-hmm. they're going to form, what they're going to look like, the whole nine yards. You know, if you're stuck solely on looking at paddling as the holy grail for all the answers, you're failing yourself already. Because there's a lot of other sports out there that the knowledge base from, or other hobbies that the knowledge base from, directly can make you a better paddler if you just learn how to adapt it to what you're doing out here in a kayak. So
yeah, I mean, and weather, you know, study the clouds, and like you're saying, the Treely app.
Treely app is the most accurate app in the world. They don't lie to me.
Just look at the top of the trees.
They're not 65% accurate. They're 100% accurate 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I rely more on Treely than I do any data on my. On my phone.
Oh, you know what? Like the number of people that we're not going out tomorrow because it's raining.
Yeah.
Well, it says on my app on my phone that it's going to rain tomorrow. And then you get tomorrow, and it's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
And you've just missed out on a whole day of paddling.
Well, the day that I stayed on shore, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
I stayed on shore. I was fully expecting a way heavier.
Oh, they were supposed to be, but it dissipated before it got here.
8.5 kilometers, and then the waves did get big yesterday. Yeah. They got unruly, and it wasn't worth paddling alone. Once they get over a meter and a half, man, it's sketch. You just don't need to do it. It's not necessary.
Right.
Now, to go out in those with a group of my friends and have a play day and spend a couple hours doing some, you know, fun surfing and all these sorts of things, I'm going to zap my energy in that 2 hours. That same energy level will get me 8 hours of paddling in different conditions.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
like it's flat.
It's planning.
You have to learn these things, and I don't think we're teaching people these things.
Right.
So,
speaking of your paddling, what gear? Let's talk about your gear.
Oh, now, I love my gear.
You started,
some of it's really old, eh?
You started with a different kayak.
I've paddled 3 different kayaks on these expeditions.
Okay.
So I like a really, really short kayak on Lake Erie because of the way the waves form up.
Okay.
And so I found a 12-foot Swift, and I paddled that on Lake Erie. And I switched it up for Lake Superior, and I went with a 16.7 Ziegel Nucka GT.
Okay.
Which is a grand touring boat. So it's definitely well set up for doing that. And then I was given an opportunity because I did something kind for someone to have a Melker Rodolga in my kit, and I've used that for the rest of the trip.
And those are the ones from Sweden.
Sweden. Melker of Sweden Kayaks. Yeah. Great company, amazing brand, and of course, for someone like me who has an affinity for the outdoors like I do, the fact that they're kind of one of the most sustainable products on the market makes sense for me.
Right.
It fits in with everything I love out here in the first place. So,
and you're enjoying paddling it?
It's fast.
Yeah. I noticed there's a lot of dirt on it.
For a 15.6, like for a short boat,
you
don't expect to get the speed out of it that I get out of that. And I'm a smaller paddler. I'm a small frame paddler for kayaking. And there's a lot of big guys in our sport, and I'm definitely not a big guy. It's a really nice boat because I can pack about 100 pounds of gear in it.
Yeah.
Not sure I'm supposed to, but I do. And it handles
it
flawlessly.
Yeah.
The more weight I seem to put in it, the better the thing just starts to, you know, go for me because it carries momentum for me and everything else. So I really enjoyed paddling it. My average speeds... my slight wind average speed would be somewhere between 5.8 to 6.2. A day like right now where we're sitting, where there's no wind, no waves, no action at all, I'd probably be cruising around 6.6 to 6.8. And then today
you
must have cruising around 10 kilometers an hour.
Early in the day you were at like 7, 8. eight, and then after lunch, you were like 10.
That was when the wind picked up. Yeah, the wind picked up after lunch. I was going fast after lunch. It was definitely great. The wind picked up. There was nice little kind of 1 foot rollers, and that boat just it wants to do that. It wants to tail into the wind, and it wants to run downwind. It's fast when it's that is literally the perfect day for that boat today. Yeah, and I've paddled that now for the majority of Georgian Bay, Lake Huron. No, we did pretty much all of Georgian Bay, Lake Huron, the entire river system into Lake Erie, and now all of Lake Ontario in that boat. So I clearly enjoy it.
Seems to be doing it for you.
It works. Yeah, it works.
Do you have any specifics on your other gear, like favorite paddles?
I use a Select XTR. Okay. That's one of my paddles. The other company I'm kind of enjoying right now, I'm looking at the Oscar propulsion paddles.
Oh, this is technology. Yeah. Yeah.
Who was using?
I like technology and innovation.
Adam, Peter.
Yeah, Peter Frank is using an Oscar propulsion paddle. Right. Yes, he is.
I knew it was somebody going that way.
Yeah.
So Oscar propulsion. I'm really looking forward to. I have one on my boat right now.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So there is one on my boat, but it's made by another company.
Okay.
But it's their technology. So I'm really looking forward to seeing a Oscar propulsion branded paddle. I think they're going to do a really good job with it. And I like innovation, and I understand innovation, and I like science, and I like nature. And so seeing an innovative product like they're putting out, I really am looking forward to kind of taking my time.
Giving it a whirl.
Really giving it my best. So hopefully I'll get to do that on this trip at some point. So.
Hopefully.
But yeah, there's an Oscar propulsion paddle, and there's a Select XTR on my boat that I carry with me. My tent is an ultralight. I carry an ultralight tent, and it's only about, it's under 6 pounds.
Okay.
And it's made by Wildlands Outdoor Gear. Those guys have been really good to me. Frontenac Outfitters.
Good old Zach and the
boys.
They're
awesome, man. You know, if Zach doesn't have it, I don't think you need it. Yeah. Like, if he's not in the shop there, I don't think you really need it for the outdoors.
You're wearing a dry suit.
I always
while you're
do.
Out here.
Yeah. Every single
like
day.
There's a cold lake, too.
It's
a cold
freezing
lake.
Out there still, man. I can't believe how cold the lake is. And it's not even so much for that. It's good temperature regulation for me.
Right.
Okay. So it helps me regulate my temperature. So even on the really, really hot days, I actually feel a lot cooler than you think I might feel inside that suit. Yeah. It's kind of gross, but you sweat a lot, right? But then you're not getting beat by the sun either.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. My ears get it really bad. My face get it really bad. So I try to keep pretty much most of my body covered up. By the end of the trip, my hands will pretty much just be big scabs from the sunlight.
Yep.
And then the water.
Mm-hmm.
So between those two things, my hands will be a disaster by the time I'm done.
Yeah.
It takes about a month to heal them after.
With the sun and all that, you got to keep as much covered as you can get.
Absolutely. That's what I do. I wear the dry suit full time. I've never paddled a lake without the dry suit on.
Right.
I don't think. Maybe Lake Erie, simply because it's Lake Erie. I'm super familiar with the lake. It's just where I felt most comfortable.
Right.
And so I think that year I don't think I used a dry suit, but the water temperature was, I was comfortable not.
So, using one, yeah.
Yeah, but at all the other lakes I've had to use one full time.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, we go out of Rotary Park there in Ajax.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll scoot out on the lake but we're not going way out. We're not going very far and that. So it's like, okay, we'll just scoot out and around and then back into the
cold water is a dangerous thing, man.
It is.
Not everybody's bodies react the same way falling into cold water. And so, there's another big, hot topic discussion. Well, this guy can tolerate that, but this guy... cold shocked and this is like, well, where's the balance? There is no balance.
Yeah,
you can't.
It's specifically related to you and your body. And so if they're telling you that this is the mammalian reflex that is natural for human beings, then you should probably just listen to that. And falling in cold water hurts. It hurts. Like, if it's that cold, it hurts.
And you can't predict how you're going to react to it either.
No, you can't. And you can react to it 10 times fine and one time not.
Exactly.
And so cold water is just not something you mess with. And so if you can protect yourself.
Right.
I mean, common sense, right?
Full on.
Yeah.
Yep. I have no problem. I'm glad I got my dry suit because that allows me to go 12 months of the year,
exactly.
And I've taken full advantage.
Yep.
Putting that thing on and taking it off and putting it on.
Just wait till you paddle like 6,000 kilometers in it and
yeah,
it.
No. At some point, I'm like, forget this.
I bring mine to a restoration company now. To have it after every trip, I bring it there, I drop it off. I'm like, you guys deal with it.
Do what
not
do.
Bad.
Yeah.
So I've had it cleaned by Parker's in Windsor, Ontario, often. That's the one bad part about a dry suit.
Hockey
equipment is a pretty reminiscent.
Yeah, you don't want the hockey bag over.
No.
Your interactions with people on this trip.
This trip has been totally different than a lot of my trips. I had some really good interactions. I shouldn't say that. I've had great interactions with people on all of my trips. Lake Superior was funny. I had some really funny. I must have looked a little rough because I stopped at one spot and I had all my gear out. I mean, I've got a really nice kayak. I've got a really nice tent. I've got some decent cookware. Yeah. I've got cell phones and satcoms and all this devices sitting out. And there was a gentleman who saw me sitting there, and I would assume he thought I was pretty hard up because as he was leaving the parking lot, he waved at me and said, "Come here." And I thought, that's kind of weird. And it was coronavirus, so we weren't allowed to be in contact. And he pointed at the ground and drove away. And I looked on the ground, and there was a $20 bill under a rock, dude.
Kind of like that.
I was like, oh, my God. And then, of course, I mean, and that leads into another great story is my partner's daughter. That's kind of how I met her. Is I was at a campground and she literally walked up to me and goes, "Excuse me, sir, you look like you know a lot about nature." That told me everything I needed to know
right
then and there about my appearance. And so, yeah, I get that a lot when you're doing these sorts of trips because you just don't get to come in. You're not in the mirror shaving your face and all these sorts of things. So, yeah, by the end of it, you look pretty grisly. Yeah.
Sunburned, windburned.
Yeah, you look like you've been outside a while.
Yeah. You know what? There was a time, and I'll say is there was a time when I was doing camping and stuff like that. You're like, ooh, I gotta wash my hands and stuff like that. Now it's just like, just wipe down my shirt. I'm good.
You know what's been great is a lot of the campgrounds now have washers and dryers and all that sort of stuff. So that's been, for someone like me, that's perfect, right? Because when I land at a place like this, I can just throw all my gear in the washer, get it all cleaned up, and for at least another couple days, I'm feeling a little, you know, healthier, fresher, a little more hygienic. Because that you have to maintain hygiene out here because that's the one thing that'll get you sick, right?
Yeah,
so you got to be careful.
Can't wear your underwear more than 10 times.
You know, you got to find any scratches and wounds and all these sorts of things. You just have to manage them and keep them clean.
Well, you can get yourself a nice shower just to hose down and make sure there's nothing you've missed.
Definitely be doing that one.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of swimming in Lake Ontario for sure.
It might come as a shock to you, but because I've had Lyme disease, I have not swam without protective gear on in over 5 years.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
I haven't taken a swim in the lake. I haven't taken a single swim in any of these lakes, man. Not once. I've never gotten in the lake because of what it causes for me.
Oh, okay.
So there's some lingering effects from Lyme disease, and one of them is temperature changes.
Oh.
And so I have some hypersensitivities to temperature changes, and so water feels great getting in, and then I can have a seizure getting out.
Oh, okay.
Or a tremor or seizures, or I'm totally conscious for them. A lot of people with Lyme disease kind of experience these types of shaking fits, but it's not worth going through them because it takes so much out of you.
Takes a lot of energy.
So you're conscious for them. You lose consciousness or any of this sort of stuff, but you shake violently. Extremely high heart rate, you know, you can hardly breathe, your body's tightening up, all that sort of stuff. So it's pretty much the same as a seizure, but you're awake and it's extremely painful. So it's just not worth getting in the water anymore for me without my dry suit on, anything like that. So I don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work anymore.
Save your energy and
Exactly.
Be comfortable.
Exactly. Do the common sense thing. If your body doesn't like it one way, do it the way your body does like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's very simple.
Yep.
Yep.
So you've met a lot of people along the Great Lakes.
Tons.
And tons. Any bad experiences?
No. No.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I think I had a park warden kind of throw his authority around a little too hard once, and maybe I didn't like that, but that's about the only recall that I ever have about any of these trips that I've done. Maybe one experience where I wasn't super keen on it.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I've met nothing but angels on these trips.
Nice.
I mean, people bring me burgers and you know, all these sorts of things, right? And when you know, come out, can I bring you anything? Sure, bring me a McDouble. You know, right. That would be great. I'd love a greasy burger right now instead of food from my boat, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I honestly, I've met some of the most salt-of-the-earth people along this coast. And, you know, up in the Sioux. My friend Tina, she runs a campground up that way now, and you always hope to get back up there and see all these folks. I landed on an island, this little tiny island, once in the worst lightning storm I've ever been in my life, and the people from one of the cabins nearby saw me kind of trying to take shelter.
Yeah.
There was a tornado not far from
where I was that
day, so it was a bad, bad day. And they ended up giving me a cabin.
Oh.
They're like, oh, yeah, here's our cabin. There's a shower, bottle of wine. I'm just, like, kind of in heaven right now, right? Like, I went from not knowing how I was going to get out of this situation to having a cabin to sleep in tonight. So it was...
And you left?
Yeah. You know?
Squatter's
do you
want
to adopt me? But no. And I have story after story after story like that, you know, where people have just come out. You know, a bear got my peanut butter. You know, I even managed to get my peanut butter. My peanut butter is how I kind of get fat content and a lot of protein content and stuff like that. And, you know, I made a funny story about it on the internet, and somebody brought me a can of peanut butter the next day. You know? I was really angry at Yogi. I was ready to go with him. I was so hungry.
I could have revved over that peanut butter.
Yogi and I almost had to go.
So, please explain what happened. Well, there's this jar of peanut butter.
He ate it looking at me. You know, like he was eyeing me up the whole time he ate it. He was just like, how are you going to do about it, bud?
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing. Just keep yelling at you.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny because everybody we've ever talked to about these long trips say the exact same thing. Like little to no negative experiences with people.
Think you get back what you project.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, absolutely.
You really do. And so when you're kind of a stranger in a new place, you tend to project that you're not trying to cause any issues. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be in your way. Yeah. I'm not trying to make a nuisance of myself. I really think it's actually less challenging to travel like this solo than it would be with a group.
Oh, yeah.
Like if I had myself and even another person, I really think that finding suitable sites to sleep at night, all these sorts of things would be so much more challenging, where I can just kind of do whatever I feel comfortable with right then in the moment, and it makes it all come together a little easier. Whereas I know a lot of people, they have sensitivities to different things, and if those sensitivities come out when we're out there, well, I don't want to sleep at this location because this is sketchy, or I don't want to do that because this doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
You know, how do you cater to those sensitivities and still get the job done? You kind of can't.
Right.
So the best thing for me is not having anybody with me, because if that 5-foot beach isn't good enough for you, it's still good enough for me.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, we've said that before, is like when you're by yourself, you don't have to argue with anybody.
No, that's right.
And if you're arguing with somebody, it's time to cut the trip short.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. But we've not heard of anybody getting in big.
Yeah, know? People are there to help. Like when we talked to Peter Frank there at length, he mentioned that he just had good experiences, people coming up to help.
And people, when they find out what you're doing, big things like that, They feel like they're a part of it.
I would
by giving
that.
A little bit of a help or having a
absolutely,
or they get to live a little bit vicariously through you.
I've had some cool experiences too, where there's people that have found me on the internet that otherwise will never physically be able to do what I do.
Yes,
and so if those people that are, you know, in bed sick, having a struggle, whatever the case is, whether it be physical health, mental health, whatever is preventing them from getting out and doing this, if they're following my trip and they get something out of that, it's worth everything to me, man.
Yeah.
I've had a couple times now where people have found me like that, and you know, if they reach out and talk to me, I keep talking to them and chatting with them and all these sorts of things, and those people really make it special, because it makes you feel like you've done something for them,
right?
You know, and that's a really cool feeling, and it makes you want to continue to do it.
Well, yeah, you're spreading happiness,
right?
Yeah, because not everybody can. I mean, like, you know, it's not accessible for everybody.
I was able to get a live feed going,
right?
And so one person was in the hospital, and so I was live, I Facebook live them through Messenger, and I just set the phone up on the ground and let them look over Lake Superior for a while.
Nice.
You know,
perfect.
Can you show me this? Can you show me that? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And show them everything you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one good thing about social media.
Social media, yeah.
You know, it can be such a toxic place, but then you can have a moment like that where you actually are helping soothe someone.
Complete stranger.
Soothe their soul. Like, you're soothing them. They're stuck in a hospital bed, and they get to be on your adventure with you for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I love that sort of stuff when that sort of stuff goes on. That really made a couple moments in a couple of these trips really special for me.
And see, you'll remember that forever.
Ever. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Some of these people go through things, man, that make me feel soft out here. Like, you got to be pretty hard to do what I do out here sometimes, man, but those people make you feel really soft compared to the battles they have.
Yeah, it just proves you're human.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
So.
Yeah. So let's talk about the lakes for a minute.
Sure.
Lake Erie. That was the first.
Yeah. Definitely the most deadly.
Yeah?
By far. Lake Erie has this vibe about it because it's all cliffs. There's no landings. There's no safe landings. The year I did it was record high water.
Okay.
And so any little bit of beach that you had at the bottom of those cliffs, it was gone that year. There was nothing.
Yeah.
And so you were paddling what I'll refer to as low point to low point, town to town. The only places that aren't on cliffs are the towns that meet you where the marinas and the rivers
are.
Lake Erie, I've had some really traumatic incidences on Lake Erie. I had a issue with a fatality on Lake Erie years ago, all that sort of stuff. And so Lake Erie has a bit of a vibe for me, and it felt like it was chasing me the whole time I was out there. Lake Erie is just a really ominous place to paddle. And it's dangerous because there's no getting out of Lake Erie. If things go wrong, it's going really, really, really wrong.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, so you definitely need your skills on that one.
You're going to have a bad day
out
there at least one of the days.
Mm-hmm.
So you better be prepared for that.
So you started in Amherstburg.
Yep.
And finished all the way down at Fort Erie.
Yes.
All in the 1 year.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't take as long as some of the other lakes, but perhaps it was because I'm familiar, but perhaps it's because it's just... It was a really boring paddle otherwise, because it's just straight and there's nothing to look at.
And you've seen a chunk of it before, many times before, right?
Until you get around Long Point and kind of in towards Dover and Nanticoke and all that sort of stuff, man, there's really nothing to look at. It's just a cliff all the way along, right? So you got a good couple hundred, 200-300 kilometers
of more
just
cliff.
Nothing but cliff, you know, and a few low-lying areas with marinas that you're going to probably try to sleep at.
Right.
Otherwise, there's nothing. It's something to see, but it's, it's there's a lot of more beautiful cliffs that I've seen.
They're just drab cliffs.
Yeah, they're just sand below average. The water, I was pumping water, you know, it tastes like clay.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It has this chalk flavor to it. I've not pumped one single pump of water out of this lake Ontario. No, there's algae blooms already. Yeah. I'm finding algae, like bad algae blooms. There's been a major goby die-off.
Right.
Yes. In this lake.
I've seen it.
Major. The whole way along. It's all gobies.
I've had a conversation with
now
work
it's starting with the starting now with the shad. All of a sudden now the shad are all starting to wash up.
Huh.
So it's starting now with them. I'm not sure. I think it's, is it VHF or VHS? Is it viral hemorrhagic fever syndrome? I can't remember. That kills these fish.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's what's causing this right now.
I mean, is it?
They have, when you look at a fish and under their skin or under their eyes, they have blood.
Right.
That's this VHF or VHS. I just don't know.
I don't know. One's a radio and one's a TV tape.
So, yeah, it's a viral thing that these fish get. It's a naturally occurring disease in the environment, and they're schooling fish,
and
so they share this
so
disease,
spreads.
Or the bigger fish eat them, and they get it, and this sort of thing. So it does spread, but it's naturally occurring. So it's, but it's definitely taking hold of the shad population out there right now.
Yeah, it's all along the beaches.
Yeah. I saw an otter on Lake Ontario. And I have a picture of it.
Now, we talked before on another show about they've been cleaning the Detroit River over the years.
Yes.
And now they're starting to see this wildlife coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I know the big thing was they saw a beaver. Somebody saw a beaver.
First time in 100 years somebody saw first time in 100 years somebody spotted an actual and was able to take a click of it, river otter on the Detroit River.
Yeah.
And the first time in 100 years that one's been reported.
Water's been which really, really speaks highly of the environmental programs that have been put in place.
I believe it's called the Detroit River Cleanup.
Right.
Was the organization that kind of started a lot of that sort of stuff. And they put in artificial sturgeon reefs.
Okay.
And those artificial sturgeon reefs ended up attracting all the walleye. And so the walleye population down there has boomed. The perch are coming back. You see the otters coming back. It's going to be a nice place to be.
That food chain is an amazing thing, isn't it?
I know. Yeah. It's incredible. And then living on an island down there, you get to see a lot more. Sorry, I live with a little kid. It's automatic. You hear little kid screaming now, and you turn and look. But no, the Detroit River is cleaning up, and I tell everybody the most beautiful way to see Windsor, Essex County is by water.
Yeah.
Driving through Windsor, everybody kind of has an idea of what Windsor is and all this sort of stuff. Stephen Colbert called it the armpit of Canada. it is an industrial town. It is a tough blue collar kind of place. But the most beautiful way to actually enjoy Windsor is by taking a paddle through the Detroit River and really taking it all in. Because from the river, it's a beautiful place.
Well, I mean, it's a total different view, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're getting that lower view. You're not just driving through smog and congestion and that sort of buildings that you can't see anything.
You go paddle under the new Gordie Howe Bridge. The Gordie Howe Bridge is beautiful. It's a huge expanse. It's just a gorgeous bridge. So.
I don't think
we took the blue
water. Because
we always take the blue water.
I'm not sure
through,
that it's actually
Sarnia.
Open yet. They're just still building on it.
Are they still
building
on it?
I think they're
pretty much complete now. They've made the span across anyways.
Right.
But now they have all the important details, I imagine, to finish.
To finish.
Beautiful bridge.
Expensive, too.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's privately owned.
Yeah, I didn't know about that part. Yeah.
Well, which means that the tolls
is
going to
be
across.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so expensive to go across the border anymore.
Yeah. So Lake Erie was good. Besides the dead fish, wildlife on the lakes.
So I dealt with I had a bunch of otters on Lake Superior.
Right.
And I mean, that was phenomenal. They're my favorite animal in the Great Lakes. But I had encounters with bears, and I had an encounter with a wolf when I was on Lake Superior.
Oh, okay.
And that was really, really cool. I remember landing on one beach. It's not too many times I land on a beach, and I look around, and I see an abundance of wildlife to the point where I don't feel comfortable staying.
Right.
And I did land on a couple beaches up in Lake Superior where I thought, this is not the place I'm supposed to be. This is animal territory, and I'm just...
I'm going to move along.
Get back in my boat, yeah. And I'm going to go down a little further to where it's not as busy as this spot.
Right.
But that was up there. That was really cool. I haven't had any negative encounters with wildlife that I'm aware of, except for last night.
fighting raccoons or something.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I'm not going to share it because I swore a couple times on the video. I did take a little video of it, but I cussed a couple times. I'm like, right? I don't know what's going on. Like, I could not make out what they were.
Did it sound like something was being skinned alive?
Pretty much.
Raccoons.
I woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I get out of my tent to go do something. Get back. Just as I get in back in my tent, it just went nuts. And it lasted for about 10 minutes. And I was just like, what is this? And I hope they weren't thinking like a skinwalker. You know? It was coming to get me. It was horrible.
It's the abominable snowman coming.
Right? Yeah. That's where your mind goes.
Sasquatch.
Yeah. I'd like to meet that guy.
Right?
Yeah. I think he'd be fun to hang with for a while.
Deer, moose.
Of course, lots of deer everywhere. Windsor Essex County, actually, paddling around in that area, see a lot of deer. I love paddling there for that reason, because you will often see deer in Windsor Essex County. But I didn't, up north on Lake Superior, I didn't see any moose, didn't see any deer, but I saw lots of smaller animals. I had encounters twice with bears on Lake Superior. So, and then I had a wolf come around, which was really, really cool. It wasn't upset or anything like that, but it was really cool to see. Have a wolf come around. Didn't pay any heed to me.
There's an island with
Isle Royale.
With elk on it or something?
Moose and wolves.
No, but there's one.
Caribou Island.
Oh, is there elk on there?
Well, or caribou. So they got isolated long ago, and so there's a living a group of caribou there, and they've been there forever, but they estimate that.
So here's where all the local stories
hundreds of years ago they got there.
I was told they were put there.
Okay.
And then I was told that this is just folklore, that they put wolves out there
to try and cut them down.
Yeah. And so
now, I had an interview with the guy from the Isle Royale wolf place in Michigan this year. It was in our episode.
Okay.
And he was saying it used to freeze, so the wolves and the moose came across.
Oh, okay. Well,
then it would be gone.
Now, then it would thaw, and then they're for the year. And the next year, some more would come, some would leave.
Yeah.
So it's always moving. So it's always, but because it's not freezing all the time now, there's more of a fluctuation in the population.
Yes. Oh, okay. So that's, we all got a little bit of the story, right?
Yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So they were talking about the getting some moose and taking them over.
Okay.
To help bring up, because then you start, if they're there too long by themselves,
you need genetic diversity.
You need the genetic diversity.
That makes
sense. So I wish I could remember what episode that was, but it was this. If you go back and look at our episodes from the Quiet Adventure Symposium, that one's on there.
The other thing that's really unique, there's been a couple times where I've landed in places that have left me with an overwhelming sense of darkness.
Okay.
So I've landed in a couple places now, and one of them was on Lake Superior, and the other one was on Upper Lake Huron, and it was the concentration camp from the war.
Oh, okay. Right.
That, you could feel something there. That was
negativity
different.
Was still there.
Because I didn't even know when I was going past it exactly what it was. I kind of looked it up after the fact, but that dark energy from that time period is still trapped on that island, mm-hmm. and you can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other place I felt that was a big mine on this big island, and I believe it was quartz. And it was a strange, unusual energy about that island too.
Sometimes you feel just get uneasy. That feeling.
I couldn't sleep on it, any of that sort of stuff, and it was just unusual. Once I left, that feeling went away, but it was unusual. But I saw some of the biggest fossils I've ever seen in my life there.
Yeah.
Like huge, big old goose fossil. Okay. I've never seen a goose fossil, but this was a big goose.
Wow.
I don't know what it was.
So you never brought it with you?
No. he's still there. But that was going towards Killarney.
Right.
Yeah, that big mine just outside of Killarney. Oh, okay, there. That gave me the EBGBs, that place, man.
Because you got all that quartz hills and and everything.
And it's all over the ground, right? Yep. They've spilled it everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's, it was an unusual. That gave me the EBGBs, too. And there's only been a few places that I can say that about. So, but that type of energy exists out there, too. So you feel it all, right? Mm-hmm. When you're by yourself that long, you start to pick up on things that you otherwise wouldn't pick up on. And that's what I kind of love about it. I mean, experience real nature and real energy. You know, some people call it supernatural, but let's break it down. The word super and the word natural. It's natural. So if you're feeling a supernatural energy, it's probably natural. Coming from nature.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it exists. It's there. You're feeling something, and it's for a reason.
Yeah.
And I like going out there to feel those sorts of things.
You know what? You take the good with the bad, you know, and try to stay clear of the bad.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So, there's just places. I mean, I've gone to campsites where I'm just like, I'm not picking this campsite.
Right.
Just move on down the lake.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Because you don't want to be sitting at a campsite all night.
Freaked out all night.
Yeah. You know? Going to be murdered in my sleep by a porcupine or something.
Exactly.
A herd of porcupines coming through camp, you know, because you've ticked them off. You've been near tornadoes, rainstorms, thunder,
hailstorms.
Yeah,
I've been through them all now. When I got to have that cabin from that family, there was a tornado about 15 kilometers away from me, really close to Parry Sound. And one of the guides from that area had actually messaged me. He said, I've never been through anything like that in my life. And he said he was having a rough time with it, and he had a group with him.
Oh,
Those
are the times you're glad you're alone.
He's like, oh, I'm telling everybody, it's all good. Yeah. It's all good. No, man, it's not
fantastic.
All good.
Don't tell my wife.
But yeah, there's been a few moments. I have had some injuries I had one injury. Out of all the years I've been doing this, I've only ever had one injury. It had nothing to do with paddling. It had to do with slipping and falling, getting water, you know, and it comes down to complacency.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I find that I've had any struggles with anything out there, it really comes down to just kind of not paying attention a second or two.
That's all it takes.
Slip and fall.
Yeah.
If it can hurt you in your kitchen, it can hurt you out here. And you know, that's how I kind of look at it now.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I mean, they're called accidents for a reason.
Yep.
You know, like, it's going to happen.
Exactly.
You know what? It may take...
Numbers don't lie.
It may take 20 years, but you're going to cut a finger or bump a knee
You're going to do something eventually. You know? And I did have an incident where I fell and I had to use, you know, my rescue medications and call a doctor and do all that sort of stuff. So that was a really interesting situation. I don't suggest breaking your elbow by yourself and then paddling for 40 kilometers.
No.
It's not a good thing. And it's taken me like 2 years for the pain to go away.
Oh, wow.
There is always just something going on with the elbow after that, right? So I feel a lot better now. But yeah, I don't suggest paddling. I cried paddling with a broken elbow.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be straight up with that. Yep, definitely cried for, you know, a 6-hour period as I paddled the Parry Sound from Franklin Island.
But you know what? The thing is, at least you had an idea of what to do.
Yes.
To get yourself out of that situation. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that get in situations and they just wee out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, absolutely. Number one, I think panic.
I don't think anybody would blame me if I called for rescue
at
that time. But at the same time, I wasn't calling for rescue. I had the wherewithal, the ability. And if I wasn't paddling and I'm immobilized, it really wasn't too painful. But as soon as you tried to move or it touched something or any of these, it would touch the side of your boat and tears would just come down your eyes, you know. So you got to be really mindful of that sort of stuff. So don't break bones by yourself.
No.
It sucks.
it's not... I don't think that's on my list of things to do.
Yeah, definitely. But otherwise, I've never had any, like, major catastrophic... I fell ill once and had to stop a trip. But otherwise, I've never had any major catastrophic incidences on a paddle trip. I mean, I've found paddling trouble that could have been bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got out of those situations and we make light of them and think about what happened and we figure out where we went wrong. We take personal accountability for absolutely everything that goes on out there.
Right.
Because I'm the only person who put me there, and I'm the only person to blame for when things do go wrong. Nature is not malevolent. It just is. It's not out to hurt you. You're going to do a good job of that on your own.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nature's nature. It's been here a lot longer than we have been. Right.
The job is to cooperate with nature.
Yes.
If you go out and you can figure out how to cooperate nature and not challenge nature, you're going to be just fine.
Nor try to change nature.
That's
not going to work.
Well, exactly. I think when you say that, I think of the buildings in LA. You know, we built them on a fault line. Years ago, they used to fall over. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did engineers do? They decided instead of trying to beat nature, which is building the giant buildings, they decided to put springs in the building. And so when the ground shakes, the buildings cooperate by moving.
Yeah.
So we're cooperating nature.
Right.
So you dominate through cooperation.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people go out there, or a lot of people perhaps kind of think, I'm going to go out in nature and I'm going to rule.
I'm going to beat it.
That's not what I'm out here doing, man. I'm out here to cooperate with nature and have a good time.
What does Kevin Callan say? I'm not out here to survive. I'm out here to thrive.
That's right. And that's how I feel. Exactly. I'm out here to thrive.
Yeah.
And I feel good. Like, I did a 41K trip today, and I feel like a million bucks.
Yeah?
You know, like, not too many people.
You're going to feel it in the morning.
No. I think I have family coming to visit tomorrow. I'm going to take a day off, maybe. No, but we're at a beautiful park. It's time to have a family day.
Right.
So I think tomorrow I'll take a family day and spend some time with Diane and Kaya and enjoy the park. And
may
and
as well, right, while you're here.
Right.
Yeah. So if anybody was going to think about doing a trip like this.
Sure.
When you're looking at all the lakes that you've done. Is there one piece of advice you would give? Something that you would say you need to know?
Nutrition. Your nutrition game is more important than any other part of your game. Because it's the most challenging one to nail.
Right.
That's where you're going to run into problems. When we're paddling kayaks, we're paddling 350 to 500 calories an hour. So if you paddle an 8-hour day, you just burn 4,000 calories.
You've got to replenish that.
You have to replace that to do it again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do you have to replace that, you have to add a bit to that so you can heal.
Yeah.
So you're at 5,000 calories for an 8-hour day.
That's a lot.
And then you got to pack that in your boat. So you have to take that in consideration. And if you don't think that you're able to manage that, chances are doing a really extended trip like this isn't maybe up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
You will lose body mass. And if you lose too much body mass, you'll get sick.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep on. Now, the thing about doing this is, especially around like Lake Ontario, there's all these towns that you can stop at.
Oh, I definitely and stop up.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody says they're coming to visit me. Like,
bring me McDouble.
Have a McDouble.
Yeah, I want some water and some McDoubles, please.
Any little like burger joint, you know, food truck.
Yeah.
I see them all now. Like a hawk spotting his prey. You know. So yeah, I stop at all the food trucks and all the food stands and anything that's close to the beach. Like, there's a little spot down the beach today. I literally pulled my kayak on the beach. I didn't even get out of my gear. I just walked right up, got my food. Everybody's dressed nice. Here I am in my skirt and my wet clothes, probably smelling up the place.
I forgot my wallet, my other dry suit.
Right?
I'll come back
so
tomorrow.
I love spots like that. That makes all the difference in the world. And not only that, it changes your attitude.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so if you are having a bit of a bad day or you're having a rough go, getting a meal you didn't have to make.
Exactly.
It's a big deal because that's energy you spend just making food.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have to hike to your campsite, and then you have to build your tent, and then you have to fix your food, and then you got to do your dishes, and then you got to get everything prepared for the next day.
Yeah.
And then you have to do your mapping. The workload never ends.
And we had that discussion yesterday.
It ends when I lie down at night to go to sleep.
The thing about paddling solo is there's no one to share the work.
No.
Oh, it's exactly. all yeah. you.
You're doing it all.
Right? You got to do everything.
But you're also not doing it for other people. If you're in a group, then it's like, well, I got to do everything for them as well.
Yeah. It's time to dole out the jobs I can at that point, man. You're doing this. You're doing this. I'll do this.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're good. We'll switch up tomorrow. Yeah. Rotate.
Yeah. So nutrition is the big thing.
Nutrition is honestly, because it's the most challenging part of all of it when it comes right down to it, man. Learning how to pack 5,000 calorie meals for 20 days or 30 days in your boat, it gets interesting. Mm-hmm. I was working with somebody on it. We do pretty good with it. But I'm learning I'm still learning little things that I can pack in my boat that make it easier. You know, it's just like anything else. And once you get experimental, you can start to experiment with different things and find different things that work and all that. Your body can only process so many food calories per hour, right? So if you eat a 1,500 calorie meal, it's not going to help you any because you're only going to get 500 calories of that anyway.
Yeah.
And the rest of it's going to be wasted.
So you have to snack a lot.
Right.
Oh, I'm good at snacking.
So
donuts.
Lots of little bags of peanuts. Lots of, you know, little...
Oh, trail mint. I got a Nalgene of peanuts.
Frozen trail mint. Frozen dry strawberries, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Banana chips. Great. I love them. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
I eat a lot of hot cereals with extra stuff added into them. So every meal I try to eat is going to be around at least 350 to 500 calories, and I'll pick something out of my boat every hour.
Yeah.
And keep eating. And then I have a
really good... Bulk barn is your friend.
Yeah. Well, it's... Costco's good.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Costco for everything. Yeah. There's a few other spots I hit.
Have you ever seen the big jugs of cheese balls?
Yeah.
We have.
Like, I pack different. I don't necessarily use just straight up dry bags. I'll use just Ziploc bags for things. I bring my own coffee. I make a beautiful coffee every morning. That's my one kind of luxury item is I bring a little metal French press with me and have a nice coffee every morning.
It's surprising how many people do that.
I love it.
Like, I've been with some canoe trippers, and they're whipping out the grinder, and I'm just like, are you kidding? As I'm just ripping open my Instant. It's like, I would be on the water by now, but you're still grinding your beans.
But sometimes it's part of the process.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, that's a little bit of that mental boost by doing your own coffee and percolating it in a little espresso maker.
Yeah, see, I'm one of those people that get up in the morning, and I want a quick oatmeal, coffee, pack, gone.
Yeah.
To get the most of my paddle day.
Yeah.
Right? And then get as much paddling in as you can, and then find camp, set up camp, and make a nice dinner, and relax around the fire. My ground coffee experience would be at night.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's where I prefer to spend most of my time in the evening, once the end of the day.
If I drink a coffee at night, I'm not sleeping.
Oh, I have no problem doing that.
I'm super sensitive. Yeah. That's why I like it in the morning, because it's like, oh, I'm ready. Pound out that first 10K, no problem.
Right?
You know? So, I love coffee on my trips. I only kind of make one a day in the morning, and that's about it. I do my little Stanley French press or whatever it is.
Like I say, I'm surprised at how many people do that.
Yeah.
And then there's the camp. The cowboy coffee people.
Yeah.
They just throw it all in and spin the bucket. And, you know. Yeah. And, okay, there we go, boys.
A few grinds. Get some caught in your teeth. It's fine.
Yeah. It's good for you. Yeah. Put hair on your butt.
Get the sock out. Just pour it through the sock.
You'll be all right. Yeah. Just walk it off.
Yeah.
Oh. You talked about Lyme's disease.
Yep.
Hypothermia.
Almost had it once.
Yeah.
Definitely started to show some symptoms of it. As soon as I noticed it, was able to get out of the water. It took me about 8 or 10 hours to feel a little better. Hot liquids, drinking hot liquids nonstop, get a nice big bonfire going and get nice, warm, comfy clothes on. Get your socks off, surprisingly enough. Mm-hmm. A lot of us incidentally insulate ourselves to be cold, instead of insulating ourselves to be warm. So if you're freezing cold, sometimes the best thing to do is get out of your clothes and into something a little more comfy and baggier.
Yes.
People wear really tight clothing, and it's not going to help you keep warm in a survival situation. So you definitely want to bring some sweatpants and a big hoodie and stuff to get comfy. And I wear one of those
puffy down jackets.
Yep.
And even I'll even put that on without a shirt on underneath just to get warm sometimes.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'll sleep in it if I have to.
Yeah.
So everything in my boat and everything in my systems all have redundancy. So if I carry a couple, like I don't just have one item, I have two, and that type of thing. So like even my boat, I don't just have a boat with a rudder, I have a boat with a rudder and a skeg. So everything's redundant. Everything you have to have twice of everything to make sure that you've always got it covered.
Yeah. Yeah, so, just to make sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you bring a chair with you?
Nope.
You sit on the ground or a log ground. Or something? Because I noticed that yesterday. I'm thinking, there's no chair here.
No, well, yeah. I don't fit. I have too much other gear to carry a chair.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things that I eliminated.
It's a luxury.
Right away. It is a luxury. Yeah. When you're paddling with your friends and you're sharing the gear load. And
yeah.
Bring your chair.
Right. Yeah, because if I was going on a kayaking trip, I wouldn't even know where to begin to pack a kayak. Like, I know how much space I got in my kayak.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, there's no way when I look at my canoe that I'm fitting even half of that.
Exactly.
You just figured out why I drink coffee in the morning. That's a huge part of the reason, right?
Right?
There. Yeah. I got an hour packing job to do
every
day, right? So when you get up in the morning, you pack all your gear in your tent, and then you get it all down to your boat, wherever your boat is, and then you start doing your jigsaw puzzle for the day.
Yep.
And that's what it comes down to. It's just kind of a jigsaw puzzle. You just put it back together every day.
You got to make sure everything's balanced.
Once you do it two or three times, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Your boat slowly starts to get a little lighter and lighter and lighter through your whole trip as you eat and eat and eat. Right, so
which is a good thing.
That's a good thing. So, on this trip though, I've been carrying a lot of extra water, and just because I don't trust. There's algae blooms out here already. Even in this cold water, I'm kind of shocked.
Yeah, you can't filter that out.
No.
So it's just not worth taking the risk. So I'm carrying about could carry it in my boat or on my boat anywhere between 6 and 8 liters of water every day. So it gets heavy.
Yeah.
And there's not always places to stop and fill up either.
No, and that's why I carry so much, because you need at least 4 a day.
Yeah.
Right? So you need at least 2 days of water.
Especially when it's getting hot out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know that's my big thing on trips. When it's hot, I'm just guzzling.
Never worried about drinking water on Lake Superior.
Yep.
Worried a tiny bit about it on Georgian Bay. Didn't really worry. I worried about it on Lake Huron a little bit more than I normally do, just because you're starting to get into some grimy stuff as you get down to the St. Mary system there. And I noticed I had an upset stomach one day, and I figured it had to have been water. But otherwise, I've never worried too much until I got to this lake. And as soon as I got in this lake, I just looked. I'm like, I can't drink this. There's no way I'm pumping.
Every summer, they're shutting down beaches. And
Oshawa Beach was
beach just down here closed.
Yeah, that's probably Oshawa Beach, right? Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not advisable to swim.
Yeah.
That's what it said on there.
Yeah. There's all up and down the area. You say, oh, we're going to go to the beach. You can go to the beach. Just don't go in the water.
that's wild, eh?
Right.
When you think about it, like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, invasive species and everything, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got the zebra mussels, the gobies, all these algae blooms and virus stuff that's going in the lakes.
Yeah.
And like
nowadays, I hate to say this, but I've seen a lot of hypodermic needles.
Oh, really?
You don't see in Toronto, William?
Come on. That was mind-blowing, man, being in the water, paddling, and seeing some things like that. I thought to myself, I took a picture of one of my landings, too, where there was more than likely an encampment there at one time, and it was just hypodermic needles all over the beaches, and you don't walk.
You
was warned not to walk on the beach anymore with bare feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't be out here in bare
feet.
You're
going to get stuck.
Yeah. So, like, what? And they're like, you do not walk around here in bare feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
So it's definitely
so
scary.
From that perspective, it's sad to see.
Oh, it's a sign of the times, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? And I mean, even where we go out of here, you'll go walking on the beach. Like, you'll get out at the mouth to look at, you know, Lake Ontario from the mouth of Duffins Creek. And the number of the vape
cartridges.
Yeah.
They just cast them away.
Yeah, it's just like, really? Like, they're small.
Yeah.
How hard is that to put in your pocket till you get to a garbage can?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and they're just like everywhere.
Yeah, but we're nature lovers, man. People don't think like that.
Yeah.
We're a little different, right?
Yeah.
Like we appreciate it out here, and there's a lot of people that just don't have that connection to it.
No.
So,
no. I think everybody needs to live up north for a while and get a feeling for what nature is.
I love sleeping on the ground. I know that sounds crazy, but one of the places I feel the most comfortable in my life is just sleeping on the ground, man. Yeah. I feel re-energized by it. Yeah. I feel comforted by it. It's just a great feeling.
Yeah.
So get outside, sleep on the ground. You see all these people. Have you ever seen grounding that guys are
yep.
doing?
Yep, I've seen that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I do the same thing, but I do it live.
Yeah. 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 Well, I was going to say, get out here, walk around in your bare feet, let your feet touch the grass, yeah. right? Yeah. Connection to the earth. Right,
every year I do one of these trips, I go home. I don't even need an alarm clock at home. I can just kind of wake up at a proper time and go to sleep at a proper time and this sort of thing. It's really easy once you get the rhythm going.
Yeah, but isn't it annoying when your alarm should go off at 5 and you wake up at 4:55?
Yeah.
No. I feel like you'll be ripped off 5 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to make a hill beat the
difference. I did not
difference.
Like waking up to animals fighting at 3:30.
Should have joined them.
Yeah, I was wondering. I'm still going back to that. I just can't get over those animals last night because it was such an unexpected place to have it happen.
Right?
Yeah. Like, never in a million years did I think that would happen on Lake Ontario.
Bad news, good news. Bad news, there was raccoons fighting.
Yeah.
Good news, got myself a new pair of raccoon slippers.
And I still saw an otter on Lake Ontario.
And you saw an otter on Lake Ontario. That's awesome to see that coming back.
That was really cool. I was just sitting there by myself. There was a couple people down the way, and I couldn't even tell them because I was just in awe. Yeah, yeah, I'm like, there's no way I'm seeing this. There's no way I'm seeing this.
And I've seen a couple beaver and muskrat, but I've never seen otters.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah. His head was like this big, man. Yeah. It was amazing. It was amazing. So I know everybody can't see what this big means, but
yeah, the fish was this big between the eyes.
Yeah.
So you are, I guess you're about halfway done this lake now.
About that, yeah. Getting well,
going forward, like, you're out of the more populated areas, and so from here on, you're going to see just small townships and stuff.
I love that.
But you're going to see a lot of beaches.
Yeah.
There's a lot of beaches going forward. So it's going to be... I'm envious of it because to be able to see the shoreline... Like, I've seen it from sailboats and stuff like that, but you're doing such an extensively long trip.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fascinating to see it all.
I'm really excited about wrapping it up and seeing what else is out here, and I'm taking my time. I'm not in a rush.
Enjoy it.
I'm not trying to set a record for paddling speed wise any of this. That's not what it's about for me. You know, if that's your thing, go do your thing. Cool. Mm-hmm. Love it. But I find that, you know, putting time limits on trips and all these sorts of things kind of make them a little more dangerous, and so I try really hard not to do that and try not to get impatient with sitting on the beach for a couple of days. And you know, even if I err on the side of caution, I've erred on the side of caution, not danger, and I'm feeling pretty good about that, so I don't worry too much about it.
Good. And you're going to finish off somewhere in the Thousand Islands.
Yeah. What did we
Ivy Lee.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ivy Lee. So I think that's where we're going.
It's a really nice spot.
That's how I understand. Yeah. So it'd be nice to have family up there.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. So after this, any ideas on what you want to do next?
Well, I've had some dreams that I would like to accomplish. Not sure if I'm going to say too much about them right now or if I'm just going to kind of get going on them. But if I was going to articulate something, I would love to go and do Lake Superior again. I kind of mentioned to you when we were just chatting earlier that if you really want to test your mettle, go to Lake Superior.
Yeah.
And so...
I have a love-hate relationship. Yeah. Well, hate, whatever.
So, how many times have you been to Superior?
Dozens.
How many times have you paddled
twice
on Superior?
That's we were discussing this. Yeah,
and so I've been to Superior once, and I paddled once.
Your one
record's better.
Then you were with me that time,
20%.
But I was with him the time that we paddled.
There we go.
Yeah, it was, but it was a nice day. The water was flat and calm. Some fog a bit, but it was nice.
That was a beautiful,
great way to finish our.
Yeah. Five Great Lakes in
our
day.
Great Lakes tour.
Yeah. That is cool, man. I love the sound of that. That sounds like something I'd get into for sure.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It really was. But, I mean, you're doing four of the five.
Yeah.
See, now you just need... That gives you a reason to go across the border and just
to you, Lake, Lake Michigan.
Yeah. Just go for it.
I think it would be, you know, when you talk to your family about these things, well, aren't you worried about, you know, people with firearms in the U.S. and all this sort of stuff? I'm really not.
No.
I really don't think I am. You know, I am a dual citizen anyway. And so it's not like I don't have rights in the country to do whatever I need to do to protect myself or, you know, and if I did talk to some locals that said it might be a good idea, I'd just do what I had to do.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I have a firearms license in Canada. We're some of the most vetted people on earth. Yeah. And so going to the States, and if I had to, felt like I needed to protect myself that way, I would, and I'd go do the trip.
Right.
You know, but, you know, when you're in the Yukon in the Northwest Territories, you're carrying a firearm when you're doing your trips and stuff in and out. And I mean, I know, watching some of the greats like Freya Hoffmeister, who's traveled through there, she's had polar bear stick his head in her tent.
Oh,
she
yeah.
was cool. Had no problems. Yeah. Didn't shoot.
Is it the Torngats? I think you have to carry.
Yeah.
Your law that you must.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carry.
Yeah.
A weapon.
Well, because you don't stand a chance.
Yeah.
No.
Like, and those ones want to eat you.
Yes.
Because food scares.
Yep.
And so you're just a food source. Right? You know, down here, I can pick the trash can or I can go to the guy. I'll pick the trash can. It's easier.
Yeah, it's less threatening. Back, yeah.
So yeah. That's what they do.
When they see
here,
you in
right?
a sleeping bag, they're thinking pigs in a blanket.
Right. That's what I always think of those bivy sacks.
Yeah.
Those
yeah.
bivy sacks, guys, these are bear burritos.
Yeah. Right? Hey, Yogi, come over, buddy.
I rock a two-man tent with one person in it so I can put my gear in it,
yeah.
you know, and that sort of thing. And I think about those little divvy sacks with just this thing over it in grizzly bear country, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This one's fresh.
That's what you just had dinner.
you're going to wake up in the middle of the night and there's going to be something looking down at you.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So. Oh, man. That'd be cool. Well, you know what? It sounds like you're having a great time doing all of this. And
absolutely.
Have had a great time.
Fantastic time.
And you, I mean, not too much left. Enjoy it while you can.
You're going to be sad when it's done.
Yeah, I will.
Right?
I will. Yeah. I'm trying not to think about that. Yeah. I'm wondering what it's like. I kind of had the thought, like, I wonder what it's going to be like this year when I go home.
Mm. You know, oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Because everything's done.
Yeah.
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 And we do that with canoe trips. You're gone. Oh, I got this 2-week trip.
I have been.
And the last day when you can see the parking lot. At the end of your trip,
yeah,
you're just like,
oh no,
yeah. Your paddling's getting slower. Have I seen what's over there? Yeah,
but I have been working on a book, so this fall I'll definitely finish up everything I want to say about my trip on the Great Lakes and try to get that out there a little bit. And I think we have a couple more interviews to do in the next few days, and that'll be that's always fun stuff to do.
Yeah.
I got to experience a lot of that during this process in my life, and so I'm just kind of taking it all in, and I'm treating Lake Ontario as serious as it really is. Like, let's be honest, every day is serious paddling out here, but it's my victory lap.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of how I feel about it. And so I'm just kind of taking my time. I'm not trying to rush through the process. I'm not trying to, you know, hammer it. I'm doing it the way I love to do it and the way I want to do it. And if I see some nice beach somewhere, I hang out on it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Know? And sit there by myself and think about life for a while. That's fantastic.
Right. You know what? You know? That's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yep.
You do you. Live your life.
That's what it's
because
all
because there's
about.
Too many people sitting at home in that chair.
Not living their life.
Not yet. Living their life. Think, oh, I should, that'd be cool to do this, that, and the other thing. There's your door.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Head on out the door. You've headed out the door and you're enjoying it.
Absolutely.
This is awesome, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the being on here. Ian Parrish finishing up with squirrels and
being squirrels watching squirrels. And
squirrels throwing something at us.
Yeah, I think the squirrels are throwing things now.
I got attacked by the red-winged blackbirds the other day, so anything's possible.
If people want to follow you, you're on Facebook?
Yep, Facebook, Ian Parrish. There's also Parrish's Trippin', which is also on Facebook. I think I have my stuff auto-posting to Instagram, but if not, after the trip is all done, I'll start putting everything over to Ian Parrish Kayaker on Instagram, or World Biosphere X on X.
Okay. Alrighty. Again, thank you very much, Ian, for coming on here and
thank you
chit-chatting about your trip.
I appreciate it, guys.
Good luck finishing it.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.